Matt Bubala here with you on Radio 720 WGN, joined by Judith Vary Baker, the author of two books. We interviewed her a couple of years ago about Me and Lee, How I Came to Know, Love, and Lose Lee Harvey Oswald. Her most recent book, David Ferry, Mafia Pilot. You're here in Chicago. Thank you so much for stopping by.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Let's go back to the beginning. You were a young scientist. How old were you when you went to New Orleans?
19.
19 years old. And you were brought to New Orleans, at least why you were told, because of what had you done in cancer research that got people excited?
Well, there are two things. Number one is I gave mice lung cancer in only 7 days, faster than I'd done it anywhere else in the world. And I did that in my high school laboratory. Of course, I had help from people who were trained by Oak Ridge and so on. But the point is that they actually came and I crashed a science seminar that had the top names in cancer research there, like Dr. Howard Deal, like Dr. Moore and Dr. Oxner, and to show them what I had. They almost got me arrested. But then they came to my high school. When they saw what I had, they closed the lab down. It was so dangerous.
Really?
Yeah, then I was sent off for world-class training.
Must have been quite a high school to have that type of facility where you guys are doing that.
It still is. And I went to the International Science Fair a couple of years before that in 1960. That was 61 when I graduated. So I had invented a couple of years earlier a new method to get magnesium out of seawater, and it went to the International Science Fair. So my school was very advanced that way. Still is, Manatee High.
No kidding.
Brayton,
yeah.
Florida.
Well, that sounds pretty amazing. So in the summer of what year do you head to New Orleans?
It was a spring of 1963.
Spring of 1963.
I was invited to go and complete a spring and summer internship with Dr. Mary Sherman, and I was promised to enter Tulane Medical School in the fall and skip 2 years of school. I was ready for that.
And you were how old?
Well, I was 19.
You were 19. So had you just graduated high school? You went that spring, or were you leaving high school early?
No, I had 2 years of. See, I was a sophomore by then in college, and was had already had all this training and extra training. The second thing I did, which I didn't get a chance to explain, when I was trained at Roswell Park, they were developing what's called RPMI 1640, a formula, and it wasn't quite finished at the time. But I was in on helping to develop that formula, which is the best way to grow cancer cells in vitro, in the test tube. In other words, I knew how to grow cancer cells better than probably anybody that you'd ever hear of.
Hmm.
I was an expert, and they brought me in because I had knowledge of this particular formula as well.
This was at the age of 19?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you were quite an overachiever. I'm going to talk to my kids about you when I get home. So you are brought to New Orleans to study. Why? Why did they tell you, we want you to come to New Orleans
to
study?
I was told that I was going to be working on a brand new way to get they had a problem with the polio vaccine. It was contaminated with a cancer-causing simian virus called SV40. And this simian virus, it's number 40 of 39 before it. These were found in the kidneys of the monkeys that they were using to grow the polio vaccine on. Now, when they injected this material into rabbits or monkeys or anything else, they got cancer. But 98 million people, nevertheless, were injected with this material in the polio vaccine program. They knew they had the contamination in it. We have the story. You can find more of that story in the book Dr. Mary's Monkey by Ed Haslam. And he mentions me in the end there. I was involved in this program. They realized that they had a potential to give people cancer if it was politically unnecessary. We have Castro smoking cigars, and to give him lung cancer was the big dream of CIA, because then nobody could be blamed. It naturally caused, right?
Right.
Wrong. That was 50 years ago.
So you didn't, they wanted you, so the reality was.
But they didn't tell me that in the beginning. All I knew is I was trying to find some way to remove or to see what was going on with this cancer-causing virus that was piggybacked on top of the polio vaccine. And it turned out that they had already separated that and found a way to enhance it using a linear particle accelerator that was located at the USPS hospital. That's U.S. Public Health Service Hospital in the Infectious Disease Laboratory, where my friend Dr. Mary Sherman was incinerated and murdered the day that the Warren Commission came on July 21st to get testimonies. They found her dead, and said it was a house fire when her complete arm was completely broiled away and not even a bone left. That's from the high voltage electricity that was used with the accelerator. You can read all again about that with Ed Haslam's book. And of course, I go into lots of detail in the book here about David Ferry, because that was her friend and my friend. David Ferry was working on the side. CIA did a lot of stuff on the side under the table that they wouldn't want American public to know about. And it includes making biological weapons.
Okay. So let's go back to why they have you in New Orleans. Right. It was, you know, they tell you to help separate this, but really they want you to show them or to...
Well, originally I was supposed to be on the side where I wouldn't have known any of this. I would be doing certain things and growing their specimens for them faster than anybody else could, because that was my specialty, you know. But on the other hand, I got there early and my doctors were out of town. I got there early because we went on the trimester system in Florida, and I had nowhere to go, and they invited me, but I came 2 weeks early. They were not there, and I was running loose. I mean, I was so naive, and when I got there and the Y didn't have a room for me, which I expected they would, I was limited in my funds until the doctors got back from South America is where they went. And what could I do? Well, I had to move into the room, cheapest room they had at the Y with my limited funds, where there were a Playboy bunny and two strippers and a waitress already. Yeah, so I was starting to see the seamy side of New Orleans. I mean, I saw more pasties and boobs than I'd ever seen before in my life, you know, and because they took me down to the strip clubs and showed me that's the real world.
Sure.
You know? Well, that was not good. I was an asset. And so they sent a young man to meet me at a post office. I thought it was an accident, but we don't believe that anymore. I was supposed to get married to my fiancé. He was supposed to come. I didn't love him that much. I basically loved sex, and I didn't realize I thought it was love, you know? Anyway, he wasn't writing. I was angry because he promised to write every single day before he came. He was going to go and marry me. And by the way, that man married me, and the next day he left for almost the entire summer, and he wouldn't tell me where he was going because he knew I'd be mad, and I wouldn't have married him because it was a close thing, iffy, if I was going to marry him anyway. So that... Lee Oswald said, oh, love until the death, you know, because, but I'm just saying that here I am in the post office and I'm angry because there's no letter.
Right.
And I had a rolled up newspaper under my arm because I had an ad in the paper saying I'm here. We were going to elope. We didn't want his parents to know. So I had this message in the paper. I dropped it as I handed over a letter to him to mail, you know, to the postman. And this fell to the floor. And I'm thinking, well, this guy, I turn around, he's picked it up for me. And I said, you know, I said, Karasha Tavarish, well done, comrade. And he answered me in Russian. I couldn't believe it. He said in Russian, it's not wise to speak Russian in New Orleans. And who was, you see, in Russia, when you get married, your ring is on the right hand, not the left.
Okay.
When I looked at his left hand, there was no ring, so I thought he wasn't married, so I flirted with him. So he walked me home and all that. And then I found out I saw the ring on his right hand instead. And he told me right away he was married. But that young man was sent to protect me because I was getting in with the wrong crowd and I was an asset. They didn't want anything to happen to me. So that's how I met.
Why did you say something to him in Russian?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because I was angry at if I said that to you, if you drop something,
right.
I said, Karasha Tavarish. Wouldn't you say, what did you say?
Yes, I would.
Well, that's the icebreaker. You
say. Oh, I see.
Sure.
So you were working him already.
Yeah, because I was angry because my so-called fiancé, you know, he didn't.
How did you know Russian? Are you of Russian descent?
No. When I was doing all this work in cancer research at the high school there, there was a huge military community there, retired, and they were concerned about all the things that Russia was doing in cancer research. And again, I was associated with people who were right from the beginning. Like we had a scientist come to our high school there, and he was a Norwegian geneticist, and he was with the CIA. And you can read about it in the book, Me and Lee. And I got interested in, and he's the one that got me in contact with people from Oak Ridge and with Walter Reed, sent me all this material. And you can't do cancer research with a lot of particular, you have to have a lot of particular materials, and I was sent these things. And my idea was to inject anti-radioactive steroids under a mass of cancerous tissue, so that when you put X-rays and shot them into the tissue, it wouldn't go past through the whole body and hurt the body. It would bounce out again. It would get a double dose, you see, because these steroids underneath would defend the rest of the body. But I had to get the cancer first, right? So getting the cancer, getting mice to have cancer, that was the point. All right, so all this is going on, and they realized that I was also assigned to work with melanoma. I don't want to get too off in the subject. Let's keep going.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to find out real quick what the plan was, because
yes,
the idea was to give Fidel Castro cancer.
Absolutely.
And naturally get him to die. So there's no need for a military intervention or anything
That's
crazy
exactly
to happen.
Right.
And then let's figure out how this devolves into Lee Harvey Oswald and the JFK assassination.
Yes.
We'll do that next. Matt Bubala here with you on Radio 720 WGN.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste.
We're here with Judith Vary Baker. The books are Me and Lee, How I Came to Know, Love, and Lose Lee Harvey Oswald, and David Ferry, Mafia Pilot. We were talking about you in New Orleans, there for cancer research.
Yes.
That's what they tell you. But really, the plot is that you are to help them develop a way to have Fidel Castro get lung cancer.
That's right.
How many people are working on this project?
Oh, my gosh. I'm not really sure. We know it started April 23rd, 1962. Because Lee told me it was the start of my husband's birthday, and that is this particular part of the project to get Castro. It's very interesting that when we're talking about how to get Castro, the CIA has admitted that they worked with the mafia and that they, you know, worked in other ways and using various methods like putting botulism in a diving suit, getting poison pills that they gave to his mistress, Rita Lorenz, and they dissolved in her cold cream, so that didn't work. They had, in other words, they were using biological weapons already of different kinds, as weapons that would attack you and in a certain way, like the botulism.
So with how many people working there, was it, I mean, when you went to an office every day or a facility, are there 20, 30 people or hundreds of people?
Well, Ochsner himself was in charge of this, and he was in contact with CIA constantly and going to Washington all the time. And he had Ochsner clinics. So he could have people working on various aspects of the project, and they wouldn't know what they were doing.
Mm.
You know, you do this part and you do that. So it was compartmentalized. But there were other sections that we had a lab over at Britannia. We had the United States Public Health Service facility there, where they had a linear particle accelerator, where these materials would be irradiated without anybody knowing about it. Because by radiation, these materials would then be like injected back into mice and finally into monkeys. But they would then select the mice with the hugest tumors, because like in 1 week, the tumor would grow so fast it'd be as big as a mouse.
Wow.
Yeah. So they were going to die anyway. So you can imagine always selecting over a whole year period of time the most vigorous tumors, and then recycling them back into mice to get the biggest again and again and again, you see.
So did you ever figure out what the idea was, what they were hoping to do? I mean, if you came up with, you know, how were they going to get this into Castro? What was their plan?
All right. Well, originally the big problem was they calculated, because our immune systems are very good at getting rid of cancer cells in our bodies. We probably carry them around all the time anyway. It's only when your immune system goes way down that you can have a problem with cancer taking over, or if you eat lots of sugar and abuse your body in other ways like that.
Is that scientifically known? Is that out there that if you eat lots of sugar, you're much more immune?
I could put a bit of sugar in a test tube and the cancer will start overgrowing itself and even suffocating itself. It grows so fast.
Okay. All right. So what was the idea for Castro?
Well, the whole idea is Castro smoked cigars. And if we could give him lung cancer, nobody would ever blame the United States government for anything like that. And this, we start with pancreatic cancer and with very rare cancers, because we don't want to have anybody be able to trace it to a cancer line that already existed, because there were many of them. And we found a rare pancreatic cancer, and it would make bone cancer and brain cancer. And what are we talking about? That's the kind of thing we have a lot of today, and it used to be very rare, remember? Think about that.
Okay. What was the idea? So, how were they going to get this into Castro?
Well, here's the idea. Originally, as I said, the body sifts out these cells. You would have had to inject caster with a pint of cancer cells to make it stick. And nobody's going to, caster not going to let anybody inject right. him with a pint. So we had to do something else. He had to remove his defenses. Because the cancer, you cannot see it. You could put it in penicillin, you could put it in anything. Those little cells are so small, you can't see them.
Okay.
It's completely clear. So you can put it in almost anything that wouldn't kill the cells, especially, say, like in a dose of penicillin or something. And maybe it's only half penicillin. Maybe it's only sterilized water, but it looks like penicillin.
So now, could they have gotten it into a drink or in small doses?
The idea is as soon as Castro was out a lot in the fields, and he was up for his DPT shots, things like that. He might be thinking he's getting DPT shot and he's getting that.
You
never know the difference, you see. But here's the other part. When, again, you've got this cancer problem, how are you going to give cancer to him? The idea, there were technicians involved. All they had to do is every year he was getting x-ray to see how he's doing. You just turn up the knob. You never know. He's getting a huge dose
of radiation.
Of radiation. Then,
but you have to get those people on the inside then who are either giving him the shots or doing
the x-rays. Well, it's not as hard as you think. Technicians are always fixing the shots up, not the doctors. They get them out of the refrigerator, remember?
Right.
Yeah. And the nurse hands it to them. They don't prepare these themselves.
No, but they've got to get the government or the CIA has got to get these people on board.
Well, it's
is
not
that why
hard.
This never worked out?
Well,
then how come it never worked out?
Well, it didn't work out in our case because they decided not to hand it off. They didn't want Cuban hands to have get their hands on this biological weapon. So they just realized it was too dangerous to give to foreigners.
So that's why they pulled out.
They pulled out at the last minute, and that's when Lee was hung out to dry right there in Mexico City. And he made an effort to try and get it, therefore, into Cuba. He was originally not supposed to do that. And we have documents to prove that it wasn't. For example, he and I wanted to get married in Mexico City and all that, or in Mexico, I should say. And he filled out a document there saying he was a Catholic, because I was Catholic. We could easily get married without being of a civil marriage, you'd be with a priest. But you have to understand, Castro at that time was kicking out nuns and priests. The last thing that Lee should have put down on any document if he was really going to enter Cuba would be the word Catholic.
Right.
Because we're talking about atheism and communism. And by doing that, it made it harder for him to get into Cuba. But that's because he wasn't originally supposed to go in. So he's kind of desperate now and trying to get it in himself trying to get in himself. It didn't work.
Why is he trying to get it in himself?
Because
the government is no longer backing this?
The person they were supposed to hand it off to didn't show up because they really called it off at the last minute.
He didn't know it was called off, or he decided to take matters into his own hands?
Well, he finds out when he's there, he's kind of exposed. He's got it. What is he supposed to do with it? So he tried himself because anything could have happened why this contact didn't show up. It might have been he got intercepted.
Right. So he wasn't informed that the plan is off.
Well,
he just knows his contact hasn't shown up.
That's right. And they gave the excuse later that Hurricane Flora was coming through and Castor was sending all his medical people, out. But that was a very poor excuse. Lee realized that he was kind of set up, that it looks like they wanted to lure him there so that his efforts, contacting the Cuban embassy and all that could be used against him soon, just 2 months later. In the Kennedy assassination, that he's pro-Castro wanting to go into Cuba desperately.
All right, so this is
it's complicated. I don't want to get too complicated.
No, that's okay. Yeah. So you're saying that in September of 63, this is when he's
early
in Mexico.
October.
Early October.
He leaves Mexico City about October 5th.
And when?
By November 22nd.
But you weren't in Mexico with him.
No, actually, it's in the book. Alexander Rourke and Jeffrey Sullivan were supposed to fly me there. They were shot down the same day. They were supposed to pick me up the same day that Lee crosses the border to go to Mexico City. They're killed. We have murders all the way through in this thing.
So when did you? So you only spent the summer of 63, or that spring?
I met him in April.
In April,
May,
and then how
June,
long were you in New Orleans?
July, August into early September. That's how long I was. And then I was in contact with Lee by telephone in October and November to the very end.
But when did you get married?
Well, I didn't marry Lee, you know.
No, I know.
Oh, I got married back in May, but he took off And I couldn't believe it. He didn't want me to know he'd be gone all summer.
So you got married in New Orleans. He was supposed to stay in New Orleans?
No, we got married in Mobile because he only had – there's a two-day waiting period in New Orleans. So he drove me all the way to Mobile where they had no waiting period, married, then he left me. And that night I was kicked out by a raid on the place where I was living. I was so naive. I didn't know it was a house of ill repute. And I was
Wait, you'd been living with strippers. How did you not know what you were living in?
I thought all of New Orleans was like that, you might say.
But
I had moved from the Y to a single room. And when Lee found out about that, of the raid, I mean, I was dragging the suitcases along and went in the middle of the night.
Why are they letting you live in a house like this? If Lee is sent watch over you and these guys are keeping an eye on you because you're an important part of this.
It said 2 weeks. The doctors weren't back yet.
Oh, this is still in the beginning of the 2 weeks?
Yes.
And in this time, you get married?
Yeah.
In the first 2 weeks, you're out there.
It's the second. I was supposed to get started on the project May 10th or so. Robert comes to marry me on May 1st. We don't get married till May 2nd. He leaves the night of May. It turns midnight at May 3rd, and they have all these raids going on, and they raided this particular place. And down came these women wearing, you know, feathers and handcuffs, and that's about all.
Mm-hmm.
And the men got off scot-free, and a lot of them were rich men, and it was a very fancy-looking house. Oh, God. Anyway.
How long did you stay married to your husband?
24 years.
24 years.
Because he was Baker, and it protected me. My name, Very, is very rare. And I was told if I got my name in the papers, reporters would say, what happened to your cancer career? Because they kicked me out of this thing because I made ethical objections to using prisoners who did not know that they're volunteering for cancer research. And if it worked, it was going to kill them. They didn't tell them that. And when I objected, well, anyway, they kicked me out of the program. It saved my life.
We're talking with Judith Very Baker. The book's Me and Lee and David Ferry, Mafia Pilot, here on Radio 720 WGN.
Pleased to meet you. Hope you guessed my name. But what puzzled you is the nature of my game.
Judith Very Baker is with us. Me and Lee, David Ferry, Mafia Pilot are the two books. So let's get into Lee Harvey Oswald and what happened. So the last time you spoke with Lee Harvey Oswald or saw Lee Harvey Oswald
37 and a half hours before the assassination.
You spoke with him by phone?
Yes.
And what did he say to you?
He said they were going to kill him. You see, he'd already saved Kennedy's life in Chicago. That's one reason I'm here in Chicago, because we have Abraham Bolden, who is a witness that a man named Lee, all right, saved Kennedy's life here in Chicago by phoning into the FBI, and contacting him and telling they've arrested our men, they arrested people. They call off Kennedy's visit to Chicago. It saved his life for another 3 weeks before the end.
Okay, because what did Lee know about what was going to happen in
Chicago?
Well,
that comes from Mary Sherman, for example. David Ferry, Mafia Pilot. Mary Sherman was a woman I was supposed to work with. She came from the University of Chicago. She was trained there as a doctor and came to New Orleans. She had all these contacts. And they became aware, because we're all working in this anti-Castro project with the CIA, and it was a closely knit thing. She was aware about how much hatred against Kennedy existed, and you know, and between her, she herself, and David Ferry, they infiltrated this group. Let me explain how they were able to do that. David Ferry stood before a large group of retired military officers in New Orleans. He was a gifted speaker. They asked him to speak at their very first meeting that they ever had. Their brand new organization. He stands up there and he's angry because of the Bay of Pigs thing, you know, that Nixon has talked about and all that, where Kennedy is supposed to have let down all the Cubans, you know. He refused to bomb Havana, so his own generals were actually rebelling against him. They were not obeying their commander-in-chief or anything. You can read about that in the wonderful book by James Douglas. It's called JFK and the Unspeakable, and you'll see that JFK was being... They were acting treasonously behind his back, even while he's still alive. So you have the problem here with these generals. And David Ferry was a gifted pilot, knew five languages. He was a pilot that worked with training anti-Castro insurgents. And some of them were captured by Castro. They were tortured and killed. He hated Kennedy because of that. And he told him he thought Kennedy was going to get shot. Somebody could shoot him from behind the bush, and maybe, like, they made him get off the stage. Then, on the side, Dave told me this. He said it came to him. They came to him and they said, do you know something? We think he ought to be shot, too. Would you like to join us? You've got all these talents. You can speak Spanish fluently. You know, you're a pilot. He was flying planes from New Orleans to Dallas and all these places in between. And they used him to get information back and forth to the group that was going to kill him. And when Dave found out later that actually Kennedy was not to blame for what happened there, that was the generals and the CIA that caused the fiasco. Kennedy was only in office 3 months. He didn't set that thing up. Nixon had. When he found that out, it was too late. He was deep in this, and he kept saying that he hated Kennedy. Fact of the matter was, Kennedy was an Irish Catholic just like David Ferry, and David had even voted for him, you know, and all that. Now that he's found out the truth, he's in deep, but he is being able to give information to someone like Lee Oswald. Why did he care? Lee Oswald was a Marine to the end, like Garrison said. All he wanted to do was be a good Marine. And when he realized what was going on, he pretended to hate Kennedy, too, so that he could get involved.
And try to make sure nothing happens.
And he did. And he sent on the 17th, it was a Sunday, before the assassination, he sent a telex. And that telex is supposed to be from Hoover, but it's filled with misspellings. Lee Oswald couldn't spell worth a darn. He had dyslexia. He could read very well, and he had a great ear for language. But it's filled, and it was obviously not sent from Hoover at all. And it says that an armed group, you know, right-wing fanatics, basically, are going to try to kill Kennedy in Dallas. Sent it out, and it's on record that this telex was received, and they've ignored that. Anyway, all that is in both these books. David Ferry is pretending to hate Kennedy, and they're using him, and he's sending on information. They both got killed. You know, Mary Sherman, I said, was slaughtered on July 21st when the Warren Commission came. David was smart, and he managed to escape for a while, but when the Garrison investigation opened up wide open, it was in the paper, David Ferry, getaway pilot for Lee Oswald, because Dave was going to save him if he could. Get him out of there, because then they thought he was involved with Lee Oswald. And it wasn't that way. He's trying to save his life. But now we have David Ferry. He says, he calls Garrison's office. He says, I'm a dead man. Do you realize you've put my name in the paper? Remember when I told you, they told me, don't get my name in the paper or I'll die. So I was Mrs. Robert Ellison Baker III for a long time. 5 days after David Ferry has called the office there at Garrison's, you know, the district attorney there, he's dead.
And how did he die again?
Oh, by natural causes, of course. Of course.
All right. So.
No, I show how he died and how they killed him in the book. I've got all the details.
If Lee Harvey Oswald is trying to save President Kennedy and he's pretending to hate him, to stay inside and to get information to help protect him, why in the world is he in the book depository on this date when the motorcade's going to come right by?
Well, wait a minute. First of all, he wasn't the one who put himself there. Remember, we were going to get married in Mexico. And he wanted a temporary job. When he was ordered back to Dallas, they said by Christmas they would be able to send him back. So he'd give me $400. It was like getting $4,000 a day. And I was ready to meet him there. But they said first they've got some work for him to do in Dallas. And when he was there, then Dave Ferry tells him, you know, this group was started in New Orleans. And I've got all the documents for it. They've got all the Texas people behind them, especially like General Walker and so on. And they've had meetings and they're setting things up. And Lee becomes aware of this through David Ferry, who was an insider. Now he.
Then why doesn't he get out of there? Why would he stay and go to work that day?
Well, I'll tell you. They say like that he brought in. Remember a rifle that was wrapped in brown paper.
Right.
It
right.
was really curtain rods. We know because it was too short. He carried it under his arm. Military style. People don't realize that when you're in the army or whatever, you carry the gun. You know, under. Cupping it in your hand, so he made it look like a gun. Anybody looking from a distance would think he brought a gun in, but he didn't.
He did that on purpose, though.
He did it on purpose.
He purposely made it look like he's bringing in a gun.
And it was curtain rods under his arm. Yeah.
Why in the world would he want people to think he's bringing a gun in?
Well, let me tell you why. Because if you're one of the shooters, you have to use your own gun, because otherwise you don't have the experience. You know, you're supposed to be an expert with your own weapon.
Right.
Well, I can see him saying, I'm bringing in the Carcano or I'm bringing in the Mauser or whatever, and he doesn't have a gun. Therefore, how can he ever be implicated? See, this is the way he thought he would get out of it. That is, with no gun, how can he ever be blamed? Well, what happens? first of all, they say they found a Mauser. Later, they changed it to Carcano because the shells that they planted against Lee Oswald didn't work. The wrong shells. So what I think happened is they were desperate trying to find a gun now to put in his hands. Of course, they had no, there were no marks, there were no fingerprints on the gun they had of his. But after he's dead, he's in the morgue, they see the FBI goes to the morgue with a fingerprinting kit, and they're there with a rifle, and we have that from Paul Grudy, the mortician. They were there for 4 hours to get fingerprints. Well, wait a minute. All of a sudden, after that, after the death of Oswald, suddenly they find a palm print on the gun. I wonder. Meanwhile, Grudy said, I had to get all this ink off of Lee Oswald's dead hands.
All right. So most conspiracy theories that I read or become aware of don't take Oswald completely out of it. They say there were additional shooters, that it was a shot. There were shots from up in the book depository, but there were additional, you know, behind the grass, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, we know. We believe there's one shot from the depository, but not from the window. They say probably not, or maybe it was even further up. We know that there's evidence from acoustical evidence from a dictaphone belt and things like that, that there were more than one shot. Even the House Special Committee on Assassination said so. They said there was a conspiracy, but they didn't have time to look into it because they were going to dissolve.
Right.
So never, the government never went back to any of that.
Right.
Lee Oswald was not up there on the 6th floor. We have, it's called the girl on the stairs. See, we have a relentless internet now. And all this stuff is coming out. Victoria Adams was interviewed by the Warren Commission and all that. And they said, oh, basically, she was coming down the stairs at the time Lee Oswald had to have come down the stairs, according to their calculations. And she was not alone. She had Sandra Stiles with two people. They said, and these are wooden stairs. Bang, 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 bang. You can hear people walking or running down those stairs. There was nobody on those stairs. So what do? They don't even interview Sandra Stiles at all, because that would be another witness. And when she looked at her testimony in the 26 volumes, it's in the book, The Girl on the Stairs, that's not what she said. They changed her testimony, made it look like she went down the stairs later. So they rig all this stuff. So, Lee was never on the 6th floor to begin with.
But he was supposed to be a shooter. They told him they wanted him to be a shooter.
Right.
He pretended to bring a gun.
That's right.
When we come back, let's see if we can find the holes in the theory and see what the truth is. I don't know if we'll get to it, but we'll find out next here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you on Radio 720 WGN. A few more minutes with Judith Very Baker. The books are Me and Lee, How I Came to Know, Love and Lose Lee Harvey Oswald, and David Ferry, Mafia Pilot. Very in-depth books with lots of pictures, lots of documentation. You try to be as thorough as you can,
yes,
because you know there's going to be people like me who are like, yeah, I don't know about this.
Oh, but the response has been incredible.
I know. A lot of people are, you know, it's not the Kennedy assassination is not diminishing over, even though 52 years later, it gets more and more interest. But let's continue with the very day. Lee Harvey Oswald knows that Kennedy is going to be assassinated. He is supposed to be a shooter. He shows up, you say, without a gun because he knows that he will be framed.
Right.
Why does he not do something else to stop it? Why does he not show up? Or why does he not call the offices there? Why does he not? You say he saved Kennedy in Chicago. Why doesn't he do that in Dallas?
Well, the problem he has here is that because he sent the telex and everything, he's now under suspicion. And because of what he did in Chicago, he's under suspicion. He knows he probably won't get on alive. I asked him, why don't you leave? He said, well, there are problems. Because if he ran, they would have sent messages over to USSR that he was a spy for the U.S. government. They would have killed all the contacts over there. They would have.
How is it better to show up in the book depository
when he knows
what's going to happen?
No, because he was working there. That's an ordinary place for him to be.
But he knows that he's supposed to bring a gun there. He knows that Kennedy is driving by. He knows what's going to happen. So I don't buy that that's a normal place for him to be. I'll just go to work and it'll be fine.
He had to show up. If he didn't show up for work, they would have found some way to implicate him anyway.
It's got to be better than being there.
Well,
right?
You can't. He had to show up. If he didn't show up, they would. For example, I know for a fact, because David Ferry told me, when we have Jack Ruby shot Lee Oswald in front of 70 Dallas police.
And millions of people.
Yes, right. And I saw it on TV. It was horrible. It had a devastating effect on me. Anyway, excuse me.
You're fine.
Lee Oswald, when Jack Ruby did it, he didn't want to. We actually have record that he called and threatened, said they recognized his voice. He didn't say it was him, you know, that they were going to kill Oswald if they brought him out. But he had to go ahead and do it anyway because the mafia would have cut off, he said, every protruding part of his body if he didn't do it. And they would have tortured his dogs to death, and they would have gotten his sister, who was also running another club. And they told him, figure out a motive, but you're going to have to shoot him, or we're going to kill you, torture you. Now, we have Lee Oswald knows what can happen to his wife and his two little, he had a six-week-old baby and another little toddler. They would have done horrible things to them if he hadn't shown up. I promise you it was true.
Jim Garrison, a few years later, opens up the whole investigation. That ends up being the movie that is why a younger generation knows all about this.
And, yes.
Why do you not speak up when Jim Garrison is doing everything?
I was in Mexico. I didn't know about the investigation at all. And then I had several miscarriages. I was in bed. I lived with a miser. If you read the book, you'll find this man didn't want me to have shoes at one point, you know. And I mean, it's very difficult to live with, but at least I was safe using the name Mrs. Robert Ellison Baker III. But this man, when I'm pregnant and the trial's going on, I didn't know because we had no newspaper. He went to college. I'm in bed. I didn't have a TV or even a radio. And I knew nothing about what's going on. I only found out at the very end when you couldn't miss it in the headlines in the paper, mm-hmm. finally. By then, it was too late. And by then, I was pregnant, and I had a little girl. She was born in 68. The trial was ended in 69. I was not going to go and have something happen to my daughter.
That's what kept you out of it,
right.
Is it your fear for your family?
Yes.
What made you come forward so many years
Oliver
later?
Oliver Stone's movie, because Lee said, you know, all he asked me, he said, please just tell my little girls that I was a good guy.
Have you ever spoken with his daughters?
This is private material I really can't talk about online here.
Okay, you don't have to tell me what you said to them, but you have
yes,
done
of
that
course
for
we've
him.
Been in contact, yes.
You have done that for him.
And oh, yeah, well, the book is dedicated to Lee Oswald's children and his wife. It's the least I could do.
You know, there's so many, as we were talking off the air, and I'm not a big conspiracy theory person.
You don't have to be who, you know, just look around you.
And there's so many elements to this. When you encounter somebody like me who keeps you sort of at arm's length and
That's
is not
okay.
sure what to make of it.
Stick around. Look at my evidence files. That's the thing. If you haven't seen the evidence files, and I say, I hope we meet because I've got... Jesse Ventura spent 16 hours looking at him.
Jesse Ventura doesn't have a lot of credibility.
All right,
in a lot,
well, let's
a lot of
use
people.
Somebody who does. How about maybe Jim Mars doesn't have any credibility with you either.
Jim or Garrison?
Garrison didn't know about this, but Garrison did say that Lee was nothing, wanted nothing but to be a good Marine. And he even found many records showing that about the biological weapons that we're working on. Lee Oswald was a courier in that. He was trained how to keep it alive so he could take it to Mexico City and all that. And
I'm not discounting a conspiracy. I just don't. There's so many different things here. It
right.
it becomes tough to decide what.
Well,
what in the world
also
is really
we have
going
focused
on.
Very well on really the motivations. Lee Oswald, being a Marine and being he was trained as a spy, went into the Soviet Union. He was only 19 years old. And 2 days later, he turned 20. But he was there almost 3 years. He comes back.
And all of that is still disputed by the government, though, right? They
no.
would say that's not true, or they have admitted to all of that
what?
As of
that
now.
He was over...
That he was trained, that he went to Russia as part of the U.S.
Well, they say he was a defector. He was a fake
right.
defector. And there was a fake defector program on. We've got other fake defectors.
Will this ever all know? Come out? Will there
of course
ever be
it will.
A time, but that the government will say,
no,
enough
no.
time has passed, no. here's what really happened?
No, I mean, look how long it took the Catholic Church to admit that Galileo was... You know, not a heretic, and she'd go to hell for saying that, you know, that the earth revolved around the sun, for heaven's sakes, 300 years. I mean, the government never, it doesn't matter. The people know better. We're having, out of nowhere, all these conferences are coming. I'm going to these conferences, like we just had the Lee Harvey Oswald conference in New Orleans, the first annual, get that. And it was packed with people. And these are people who knew
Judith,
Lee.
Judith, I know, yeah. I know. But here's the problem is that people look at that conference and
yeah.
say, well, those are a bunch of people who buy into
who
this
read
stuff.
The, book.
The same people
they
who
read
are
the
sending
book.
Out 9/11 videos and,
well, yeah,
and saying
have
that
all
the government
that.
Is okay with people giving cancer. I mean,
sure.
So
but here's
so
the
that's
thing.
Where
when,
it gets.
When they meet me and they see my evidence files, which you haven't, And when they recognize all the things I did accomplish, how is it that a girl who did all the things I would do would just, if I'm going to go and make up a story like this, think of it, I would say that Lee Oswald killed Kennedy, I'd be a rich woman.
That's not as rich. That's not as rich.
I would be rich.
I think you're better off on this.
I'm not.
How would you make more money saying that Oswald killed Kennedy?
Because all the major media would have brought me in. The book would have been reviewed by the New York Times and the Publishers Weekly would have had it, all that stuff. Oh, when I first spoke out, they brought me into New York and everybody wanted to see. When as soon as I said Lee Oswald didn't do it, they dropped me like a hot potato. Oh yeah, they did.
Because then you're just another conspiracy theorist
easy to put a label on someone.
Is there anything still under seal by the government that would be revealed? I mean, there was talk about...
But they're not going to... We've got Photoshop now. We're not going to have anything come out.
But there was talk about after Mrs. Kennedy died that some letters would be revealed down the road. Do you ever think there's anything that from the government will come out that will shed more light?
Just a couple of weeks ago, the government came out and admitted that they did a cover-up on the... and didn't tell the Warren Commission all kinds of things about Lee Oswald. They're never going to tell you what they didn't with. And who do you have right on the Warren Commission? Alan Dulles, head of the CIA, is actually a member of the Warren Commission. And he was fired by Kennedy. And the last thing he's going to do is say that Oswald was a CIA agent, which he was.
Yeah.
So that they put him deliberately, Lyndon Johnson did, right on that committee to make sure that never got out. CIA says, yes, there are things we hid from the Warren Commission, didn't tell them how the CIA was involved. What? In the plot to kill Castro, and in the fact that Lee Oswald was involved in that, when he's handing out all these pamphlets there in New Orleans, it says hands off Cuba, that every time they saw a Latino take one and not throw it away, because if they were anti-Castro, they'd throw it in the wastebasket. If they took it in their hands and went around the corner and they still had it in their hands, they went over there and arrested them, beat them up, put drugs in their suitcases, and sent them back to Cuba. So he was actually ferreting out spies that Castro had in New Orleans. And they used that against him, said he was pro-Castro. Never was.
The two books, Me and Lee, How I Came to Know, Love and Lose, Lee Harvey Oswald, and David Ferry, Mafia Pilot. Is the website still meandlee.com?
The best place to go is judithbaker.com, J-U-D-Y-T-H, baker.com. And also go to Talking Stick, parts 1 and 2, because there we talk about the weaponization of cancer and how people today we've had cures for cancer that have been delayed because the funds are not going to cures. They're going to new chemotherapeutic methods instead. All I wanted to do was cure cancer. And I got in on this project on the wrong side. It was an accident. You can read about how it happened in the book. And all I ever wanted to do was help people. And now what I'm trying to do is still help people.
Okay, Judith Very Baker. Fact, fantasy, or fiction? You decide. I'm certainly skeptical. A man who also is skeptical of her and of all the different theories out there is named Dave Perry, but he also believes that maybe there is a conspiracy. It's a very interesting outsider's take.